This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 222, sponsored by C2E2, Audible. Go to audible.com/iFanboy for a 2-week free trial. In stock trades in the Summit City Comic Con and iFanboy listeners like you.
Find a cure for my life, find a cure. Find a cure for my life, find a cure. Find a cure for my life, find a cure. Find a cure for my life, oh my God. Are you sick? I'm in control, oh my God. Are you think it's all for fun, oh my God. Are you think I'm in control, oh my God.
Oh, hello, welcome to iFanboy.com's Pick of the Week podcast, episode 222. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And sitting in with us is Tom Caters.
Hey, what's up? What's up, guys?
Why is Tom sitting in with us?
And not Josh, asking? Especially when Josh had the pick of the week this week.
Yes, yeah. This is Josh's pick, and Tom is here instead of Josh because possibly this very moment, Josh is becoming a father.
Yes, as at the time of recording, he's in the hospital with his wife, who is delivering their baby. So we wish them the best
what
of
we
luck.
Think.
We think, we hope.
We've never had her confirm that it's his baby.
Hey, I just found out she was pregnant today, so I don't know what this whole baby thing is about. But
this would be at least the second time that Josh has had the pick of the week and not been on the show.
And definitely the second time that he's had the pick of the week, not been on the show, and been in the hospital.
And yes. Isn't it the second time that he's claimed to be having a baby and that's why he missed the show? Remember? He did that last time and then he was like, oh, we left it someplace, and we don't know where it went. And it's not a big deal.
Multiple dead grandfathers at school.
Yeah. So anyway, so just so everybody knows, a slight lineup report. Josh is probably going to be taking some time off from my fanboy, so he's not going to be on the show as much over the next couple weeks as he deals with having a new person in his life. So we're lucky that Tom is fairly available.
Everything else takes a back seat. If I have children and they're in another room, I won't let them come near me while I'm recording.
So yet another gain for iFanboy by Around Comics' demise. But we thank Tom for stepping in on it.
If anyone could see exactly what I look like and how I'm sitting right now, no one would think it would be a gain for you guys. I'm like a thin, younger Alan Moore, like curled up on a wooden chair, speaking into a microphone.
That's good. Yeah.
Do you have rings on every finger?
Magic rings.
Yes, magic rings. Yeah. So if you are a first-time listener, I apologize. We are at fanboy.com. We like comics. We read comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us, who's usually here, picks the best one, writes about it on the website. We talk about it on this podcast, along with the other books from the week on the topics of interest. And stay tuned to the end of the show. We've got another announcement, another giveaway winner in this month of giveaways for iFanboy members. So stay tuned for that. And before we get to the show, reminder, warning, this is a review show. We'll be talking about the books with spoilers. So if you haven't read your books yet, pause or utilize the show notes to skip books you haven't read. But before we get going, Ron's got an announcement for everyone.
Well, you join me in this announcement. If you are if you have been on the internet and been on iFanboy.com or Twitter or whatever, you might have heard that there were some changes at iFanboy that are announced this week. We were proud to announce that iFanboy has been, in business terms, acquired by Graphically, which is a company, which is a new company that is a digital comics entertainment platform company. And you might remember them from a couple of about a month ago or so. They came to us and offered access to the beta version of their comics reader to all of you, the iFan base. And you know, we was talking to them. They were pretty cool. They were into what we were doing. We were into what they were doing. And we were able to figure out a way for us to work together. So if you go to iFanboy.com, there's a full detailed post about what this means. And really, it means very little. It just means that we're not going anywhere. And if anything, it means that we're going to be growing and hopefully giving you more comics content to enjoy over the next over the many, many years to come.
You know, it can only mean good things to you.
Exactly, exactly.
It means more work for us.
but good work, right. Exactly. Yeah, good.
Well, it means that Josh will be able to feed Graphically Flanagan his child.
they did get the naming rights. So there's a full FAQ on iFanboy.com. It's a red post at the very top. We'll leave it up there for this week as well for anybody who doesn't frequent the site. Go there, check it out if you're curious about it. But we just want to reiterate that you know, Connor and I aren't going anywhere. Josh presumably will come back. he plans to, at least after the baby. But you know, so we're not going there. Everyone that's associated with iFanboy isn't going anywhere, and it's just going to be. It means good things. So we hope you are happy with that. I hope you are supportive, and everybody has been. We've been overwhelmed by how positive everyone's been and the great kind words we've gotten. Except for you, Tom. You were kind of mean on Twitter, but whatever.
Well, yeah.
I love when people don't get
sellouts.
That. I love when people don't get that we're friends and we tease each other. Yeah. But yeah, anyway.
Oh yeah, and Tom vs. the Flash is sponsored by Kennedy Fried Chicken now,
which is the best fried chicken in the country.
Best fried chicken. The other KFC.
Yeah,
I prefer their biscuits, to be honest, to the chicken.
But so anyway, so we're proud to be a part of the Graphically family, and iFanboy is not changing, not going anywhere. So keep listening, keep reading, and we thank you.
Well, just it might change for the better, just by adding more cool things that we couldn't do before on our own, but now that we have a partner who can help us do things that we think are cool.
Exactly.
If you like the show the way it is now, it will be the same. If you don't like it, it will become what you want it to be.
That's a great answer. So, all right. So that said, Josh had the pick. Oh.
Yeah. His pick of the week was Blackest Night, The Flash, number 3 of 3, which means this is the second miniseries starring Barry Allen, and it ended before the first.
Yes.
You're right.
Yes, it did.
Awkward. This was written by Jeff Johns, drawn by Scott Collins. This is the Blackest Night tie-in where the rogues are dealing with their resurrected rogue compatriots or family members or what have you, and Blue Lantern Barry Allen's running around. I like this costume.
Yeah.
I think they should stay Blue Lantern Barry Allen. It would help differentiate between the Flashes.
Not to be too cliche, but we're lucky that Tom is with us because Tom is a bit of a Flash fan.
Oh yeah, I quite enjoyed this issue.
Yeah,
it's just mostly for the rogue stuff is always the stuff that I have the most fun with. And anytime you can get Scott Collins drawing close ups of the rogue's eyes, which you know it's common when he does it, but it always looks cool. And it was. To me, just a sort of a backtrack to those really great Jeff Johns rogue stories from when you wrote the first, you know, run of The Flash.
And that's what it reminded me of. I mean, anytime you get Johns and Collins working together, it's like we saw it in Final Crisis, Rogue's Revenge, and all this stuff. It's just something like this team does it for some reason.
And Josh mentioned in his review that the art by Scott Collins or Collins it seems to be better when he draws The Flash. Like he's drawn other books and it's been good. I've definitely enjoyed it, but something about him drawing The Flash and the way his lines are so kinetic and it's less messy than it was when he originally drew The Flash. When he first drew The Flash, it was very messy, but it still worked because if you get this sense that everything's always in motion when he draws it.
He almost has a different style that he uses only for when he draws the Flash. Because I've picked up other books that he's done, and I've been like, oh, this, I don't like this, you know. And it's almost like he slightly adapts his style for the Flash. Although I thought this one, because I believe he inked himself as well, which sounds vaguely dirty. I thought at some point some pages were a little muddier than others. Like some pages were really super clean, but then others were like really heavy and kind of dense. And so I thought it was a little inconsistent in that regard.
I don't think every artist should be able to ink themselves.
Yeah.
As it got towards sort of the very dark ending of this issue, that it became much muddier.
Yeah, like I'm looking at that full page where Black Lantern Captain Boomerang kills Digger or whatever, like his son.
About time.
Yeah, about time. Totally. Get rid of that scarf.
I was annoyed by that character.
Yeah.
You know, I liked it. Was one of those characters that when they first introduced him, I was like, oh, they could do something cool with him, and then he just kind of bounced around to different things until they got to the point where they're like, ah, let's just kill him.
Yeah, well, they gave him speed, didn't he get some of the Speed Force? It was like, really? Like, yeah.
That's a sign of they don't know what to do with this character, when they just keep giving him different powers and abilities until they figure it out.
Yeah.
I really liked the second half of this book. The first half, I was kind of... Granted, I read it after the pick, so I was going into it with the mindset that it was the pick of the week, so I was a little less impressed with the first half. But the second half, when you got to the really dark parts with Captain Cold and you find out what it is, that what's been going on, and he shoves him into the hole with his father, that was really awesome.
Well, I mean, what was great was how I thought what did it for me was how the book ended with the duality between Barry and Captain Cold.
Yes.
And I thought that was really done elegant and really good, and if that's a tease for what's to come in the new Flash series... Then
I think it's got to be. You know, Geoff Johns loves the Rogues.
Yep,
and they've set up Captain Cold as the primary badass Rogue.
I love their code. They don't kill women or kill children. That's awesome.
Right. And it was very chilling when you found out what it had been going on.
Yeah.
I like it because the parallels between them are interesting. In the fact, you know, Barry's got his Flash family, and in a way, the Rogues are extremely dysfunctional family, but they need each other to sort of function. If they're not all together, they all kind of start falling apart, because in a weird way they balance each other out. You know, without Captain Cold, Heatwave is just out of control. He's just a pyro who doesn't have any direction. So might as well give him a criminal direction. I mean, it's not the best moral choice, but it's a direction that gets him someplace.
Isn't Mirror Master a cokehead?
Yes.
Yeah. Right, which is kind of funny because the mirror is like coke off the mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's one reason why to keep the blue costume, because then he's really then it's really the mirror image of Captain Cole.
Yeah.
And action figures.
Well, there's going to be those action figures. No, in April for Flash number one.
I thought the Rogue stuff was the strongest. I thought the Bart stuff was all right. I mean, you know, like the Flash guys fighting the Black Lanterns was all right.
There's a certain clumsiness to it because of the fact that Rebirth isn't done yet.
Yeah.
You know, he has to keep referencing that this dead body of Reverse Flash.
That's when it got really kind of kludgy, where you really kind of got like, wait, what?
Hurt my head, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Every time I see the word Eobard, my head hurt, or whatever it is.
And it's because it's sort of running congruently with something else. You can always tell when a book has to do that, to like, it's got to explain it away. But if Rebirth had been done, I don't think it would have been, you know, that confusing to have read, because you're reading two stories with Reverse Flash in it, and you're like, wait a second, why is he doing this in this one? So
yeah, Tom, what did you make of the inversed black and white Eobard Thawne of Earth, and then isn't that the Brightest Day symbol over him? Did you see that page?
I don't know. I'll be honest with you, Ron. I have
I mean, we don't know, and we assume that that's a sign he's going to be resurrected.
Yeah, maybe.
I've always thought that the Blackest Night's leading towards, you know, a mass resurrecting.
Right.
It's, time travelers are never dead.
Yeah, you can always pull somebody from any time in the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was a big Blackest Night week.
Oh, yeah.
Including Green Lantern 51, who I thought was the star of that book, was Doug Monkey.
Oh, it was awesome. His art was fantastic.
He drew the hell out of that book, including a very, very creepy parallax.
Yes.
It reminded me kind of almost how I felt when I would read, like, Crisis on Infinite Earths when I was a kid. just because it was extremely fast-paced for a modern comic book. When you think of everything that happened in the last two issues, Hal Jordan becoming Parallax, you could imagine them stretching that story out into its own arc. Yeah. But they kind of did it. They got what they wanted out of that part of the story, and then they moved on and actually moved really quickly, I enjoyed.
Well, that was the whole thing, because I thought this whole Spectre Parallax thing, like, it's coming really late in the game, you know, and I almost thought it was we see the finish line coming, and I was like, oh, we're going to take this kind of detour, and I don't really understand why we have
to.
Well,
I think we did this to show they're basically throwing all the big guns at Necron.
Yeah.
And we see that the Spectre is the wrath of God,
right? Yeah.
And he has no effect on Necron. So I think what it serves is we get to the end of Blackest Night going, shit, how are they going to win?
Yeah,
because every big all these big guys can't do anything to him. So I think it's just to serve to set up the finale, which is they're going to have to do something really really intense to beat Necron, and we don't know what it is when a guy like the Spectre literally passes through him with no effect.
Yeah. On the story wise, though, when Parallax gets sucked away by an unknown force, and then the call back to Hector Hammond, that was like, ooh,
he's setting up for the next one.
Yeah, exactly.
He's constantly moving the pieces around, and he's not, now he's already moving to the next story, even while the story's not done yet, which is good.
Monkey inked himself as well, by the way, just to note.
Oh, I didn't say all inkers can't. All
I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
It definitely looked much better than when they had the 7 or 8 inkers on him that one issue. But
the DC throw more inkers at it to get the book done style of comics.
One a page. Hey, listen, do you want it out on time or do you want it with one inker?
I just think it's funny how the repetition event that seems to happen in Blackest Night is that somebody joins the fray and they become a Red Lantern, and then they become another Lantern. Like how many times have
a lot of angry people at DCU? We're finding
exactly.
They just come right near a Red Lantern ring. Suddenly they're angry too. Yeah. There's a lot of implications in the other book too, which the Green Lantern Corps book, which we're not talking about. But they said you can't really fully purge yourself of the Red Lantern effect. I was like, oh,
that sucks.
I never thought Mara was that angry. I'll be honest. I mean, yeah, she had her kid killed and. She was married to Aquaman, who could be a douche sometimes, but I wouldn't have thought she's really angry. Lots of rage.
Well, do you know? Okay, not I know it's not this. It was earlier. It was last week or 2 weeks ago. But yeah. Blackest Night Wonder Woman. What the hell happened in that 2-page spread? It's been bugging the shit out of me when Wonder Woman puts the lasso around her when Mara, and then you see all these scenes.
I think she's remembering like all the terrible things that have happened because you see her kid, the Black Mantis, killing her child.
Yeah, and Aquaman sleeping.
Yeah, but then she says, "Oh, you never told her." And then she said, "And then she says, no, I never did." But no one knows what that refers to. No one's
interested. Drove me crazy. I think Black Manta is the father of the kid who died.
Listen, Aquaman had a Blu-ray player that broke, and it was because Mara spilled a coffee on it, but she never told him. And he's in the back of his head. He's always thought it was her. He just never. Just
he sat down to watch Deadliest Catch. he had cleared his schedule.
What nobody knows is that Aquaman is a rabid DVD collector. Every Tuesday, he's at Best Buy to get the latest movie.
Get the collector's editions.
Finding Nemo. He was getting ready to watch it.
Yeah. HD DVD was better.
Anyway, so I mean, Blackest Night. I mean, goes down as one of the events that is not hasn't been a bad moment. Although I forgot to get Green Lantern Corps, I just realized.
So it was good. I think it was a little better than Green Lantern, but the next issue is out next week, and we end it the month after, and hopefully we can move on. It's been fun, but it's also time to move on.
It's nice that the pace. A lot of times with event comics, like the first issue is the best one.
Yep.
And it's kind of nice to have one where it feels like the momentum's actually heading faster and faster towards something.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like the cool reveal at the end of the first issue and then like, oh, what do we do now?
Right.
So I've enjoyed that portion of it.
And
that's when you can tell the writer only had the pitch. No, really. Usually, they you have the cool hook, but then they never had the resolution in mind.
Right. Yeah. Well, speaking of moving on, Uncanny X-Men 521 is lurching forward with the Nation X storyline.
Lurching. Is that good?
Actually, in a good way, in an interesting way. This was probably the first time I've ever read the character Phantom X and I haven't hated him. which I hated him in Grant Morrison's run. I just hated him. But
well, I think you just had a lot of issues with the Morrison run. Yeah, he probably just unfairly got wrapped up in.
Yeah,
it was you, Rob.
Painted him with the brush of Morrison.
Yeah, and I'm going to say something about this issue that's going to get me a ton of shit this week. But the Greg Land art wasn't awful. It wasn't the typical. I didn't have the typical violent, you know, throw up in my mouth reaction where it was way more safe. Like the layouts were very safe. I thought. Didn't take a bunch of risks, but the big thing is that so in the story, Magneto has climbed some mountain in San Francisco, which I'm not sure if it exists or not. I have to look that up. But he's climbed a mount, yeah, Tamalpais. I don't know where exactly it is, and he's sitting there meditating, and his nose is bleeding, and nobody knows what he's doing. And the big reveal at the end is we cut to the space bullet, and Kitty's in there, and she thinks that she just says that she swears she felt the direction just changed.
Is she disheveled? Is there like a pee bottle?
Like, no, yeah. She's like Howard Hughes at long fingernails. No,
she's got to be right. Like,
yeah, it's been months. It's been at least months.
Out of control leg hair.
Right.
Oh, God. That costume's got to be gamey at this point.
What has she been eating?
She's basically, all we see is just she's kind of sitting like she's got her arms wrapped around her arms and her hair looks messy. We don't really know. But I don't know. So it looks like Magneto is going to be the one who's pulling the bullet back to Earth, which is going to ask the question, is the bullet going to go through Earth again? How are they going to get around?
And it just all starts over again. It passes through. He's like, I don't know how to stop it.
We're doomed to repeat this every time. But yeah, so I guess next issue is the return of Kitty Pryde, and we'll see if our fear that Kitty Pryde drawn by Greg Land will exist or not. I'm hoping not, because the next issue tease is by Dodson. So... we'll see, but I'm still enjoying X-Men. I love it. It's good. This issue had a lot of stuff going on with different characters, and it felt like an X-Men book should be. So, I dug it.
How often does that happen?
It's like one issue every 4 years.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
What did you guys think of Joe the Barbarian number 2?
I kind of wish I just would have waited to get the trade. I enjoy it, but it's sort of weird in that like the beats at the end of the story aren't. Like end of a single issue type beats,
right?
Yeah. So, but I mean, the art's gorgeous.
The art is ridiculous,
and it's kind of interesting to see, you know, going against type of what people think Morrison sort of does. He's definitely sort of taking a step back and letting the art sort of dominate the story,
right?
Instead of making it a very, you know, some sort of meta text about the Transformers you own.
Yeah, it's a very
which I would read that too if you want.
There's sparse dialogue. I mean, it's not typical Morrison. I mean, like if you look at the page, the word balloons are like not even an eighth of the page. I mean, it's mainly all art. That two-page spread of the city or whatever it is that he came upon, you know, it just looked just totally beautiful. So I guess, I mean, the story, the kid's diabetic, and this is I'm not diabetic, so I don't know what it's like, but this is some sort of diabetic reaction. He's having some sort of problem, and he keeps slipping in between the two worlds. Like
he's hallucinating.
Yeah, he's hallucinating his toys. Yeah. So
I have to say, from the art standpoint, here in Brooklyn, the comic shop, Bergen Street Comics, had a party for Sean Murphy, and they had a lot of his art on display from the first issue, and it was gorgeous, and, you know, and uncolored and, you know, in person. Just beautiful stuff.
I bought a page from that first issue. I haven't gotten it yet, though. But I
because I took it.
You bastard!
I told them I'd take it for. I'd hold it for you.
Yeah. No. But
let me give this to Rod.
I'm excited because apparently they sold like ridiculously fast. Like within
they were beautiful, and he draws a little bit smaller than normal comic size, so it was not overwhelming on your wall or something. But nice. This is an interesting, but like you, Tom. At the end of this, I thought, it's probably going to be really good altogether.
Yeah, because it just doesn't have like the cliffhanger thing that you get from a normal single issue. It's like, oh, okay, this is the end of the 22 pages of the story.
Well, it's going to be, I mean, it's an 8-issue mini, so it's going to be a great, it's going to be a great collection. It's going to be a great
book. Yeah, it's going to be fantastic.
But
since it's Vertigo, the trade will be out soon as opposed to 2013. now, Tom, I read Justice League of America 42 and I had some revelations, but I want to know what you think of what's been going on with Justice League.
I got the last couple issues. I'd been sort of like, waiting for it to pick up a little bit. And I got to say, I enjoyed issue number 42 more than I've enjoyed a Justice League issue that I've read.
Yes.
In quite a while. It was fun.
I think it was the best one in years, I thought.
I totally agree. I actually, before we did the show, I was like, oh, we're talking about Justice League. I hope I'm not the only one who liked it.
No. It was just cool to have them.
Best one in a long time. Stuff.
Yeah.
I think Rob, I was actually thinking my two revelations were one good, one bad. One was, I think Robinson's perfect for this book.
Yeah.
Because it's very, from reading his essays in the back of Justice League, Cry for Justice, and from just talking to him, he's a DC nut. And he knows all these characters, and there's a lot of flashbacks to old characters and things. And I think he's perfect for that in that sense, the sort of legacy aspect. My negative realization was, I don't think Bagley's the right artist for this book.
That would be
I'm a big Bagley fan. I like Bagley, but I don't think he's right for this particular book.
It's almost too youthy. Some of the characters look a little too youngish, especially like the Teen Titans characters who become members of the League. And maybe that's just my own personal like bias of how I think about them. But a couple times I was like, Donna Troy just looks too young.
Yeah,
like a little bit too much, but it didn't really affect my overall enjoyment of the story. Because I enjoyed seeing them have interactions with each other and do something, and there's a mystery, like what's going on, instead of everyone walking around like talking about what just happened
and whining about it, and
and there's not. And it had a little less of the pathos that Cry for Justice has. Cry for Justice almost has a little too much of that, a little too serious. And this kind of struck the right balance. And the Hal Jordan, Dick Grayson interactions were fantastic.
Yeah, I like that. I like that tension. Not even bad tension, but just the idea that you've got Dick Grayson on the team now in the Batman role, and he's ordering people around, and Hal Jordan's like, "Whoa, this is weird."
Yeah, I thought that
he's the kid in short pants, and I'm taking orders from him. Yeah, I like that.
I thought the opening narration of I love I'm a dork. I love the little the narration boxes with the logos. It's easy to make them color coded, but the logo just helps and works, and I just love seeing that. And I thought that opening scene, that opening fight, where you've got Donna, Hal, Batman, and Starfire all thinking to themselves, and I love when you see that whole thought. These should be thought bubbles, basically. I mean, if this is 1985,
we've been saying it for years. People said there's no more thought bubbles. They are. They're just in captions now.
Exactly. It's just done stylistically differently. My one question though is, on the cover and in the main thrust of the book, these are the new gods, I assume. Like, I'm not the DC guy. Like, are these?
I don't know either.
Is this the new Barda, the new Miracle Man, the new Orion?
They're like weird to me. They are weird, sort of mutations of like Dr. Impossible's Mr. Miracle. He's like a evil mirror version of him. And I kind of think all of those characters are like that. I don't know if they're replacing the new gods, if they're from
It could be kind of like that. What is the team with the owl and the Ultraman and
Crime Syndicate.
Yeah,
like Crime Syndicate. Yep. But the new gods, because they all are obviously sort of twisted versions of.
Well, because I knew the new gods were killed off, right? So like I thought, are they?
It's possibly related to the fact that the beginning scene we see current day Green Arrow. And then at the end, we see old school Green Arrow.
Interesting.
And did he just change costume? Or is this a different Green Arrow from a different...
Interesting. So you've got Mike Grell hooded Green Arrow. Or is that the current one? In the beginning, he's...
Yeah, no, that's how he's dressed now. He's angry and he's pissed off. And then at the end, we've got some happy-go-lucky Robin Hood Green Arrow. So is that just... Did he have a good day during the issue? And
the Shade is a fantastic tailor.
Yeah. Or is this...
Do you want a new costume, Holly?
So we'll see. But I really liked it.
I mean, I'm excited. I mean, like, we've talked about Justice League, and we've complained about it for Jesus, Connor, for like what, two years now,
pretty much since Meltzer took over for me.
Yeah, and we felt bad for Robinson for having to pick it up in the middle, he had to pick up the pieces from the shit that was left behind it. And I really hope they give him an opportunity to restart it clean after Blackest Night. And obviously we see the beginnings of his team coming together. You see Mon-El there and Dick and Donna and stuff like that. So we know what his team is going to be. It's just a matter of like, let's get there,
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So speaking of doing it.
And doing it well. Like Chicago. I don't live in Chicago anymore, but they know how to do it. And they also know how to have comic book conventions in Chicago. And now there's going to be one downtown for the first time in over two decades, a National Comics and Entertainment Convention. It's coming to downtown Chicago. Make your plans now to attend C2E2, the Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, this April 16th through 18th, right after tax season. But I'm not doing taxes this year, so I won't be stressed out. Join thousands of comic book fans, creators, and celebrities for a weekend of fun and excitement in the city of broad shoulders. Special guests for this year's show include Alex Ross, Jeff Smith, Jeff Johns, Mike Mignola, which is hard to say, on Vicodin, Ethan Van Sciver, and hundreds more of your favorite and least favorite creators. Tickets are only $25 for one day pass and $50 for the entire weekend. For a full list of guest events and to purchase tickets, visit C2E2. But wait, there's more. C2E2 and iFanboy are giving you a chance to win tickets and exclusive C2E2 merchandise before the big weekend. We'll be giving away one amazing VIP package, 3 weekend passes, 5 exclusive C2E2 posters signed by creator and guest of honor Alex Ross, and 15 limited edition C2E2 t-shirts, and the grand prize is lunch with an editor from Marvel. So get all your continuity questions ready. Entering the
index
contest.
Cards.
Bring your index cards. Excuse me, what exactly are the X-Men's uniforms made out of? Entering the contest is easy. Just visit www.c2e2.com/ifanboy and enter your name and email. That's all it takes. We'll be drawing winners from all the entries on March 19th. Stay tuned for more exciting news about our official C2E2 after-party plans. More ways to win tickets and exclusive merchandise by following C2E2 on Twitter at C2E2. I also want to mention, you can see Chris Niesman probably get blind drunk. Just go around Chicago. Everybody knows him. Follow the EMTs.
It's the byproduct of the party. He's got a problem.
I've seen it. I saw it in San Francisco.
Yeah, we saw it in New York when he threw up in the street.
Oh yeah, we did.
Oh, God.
In the gutter.
Yeah. He claims it was the garbage. We were right there.
No, it was the gutter.
It was nowhere near the garbage. It was bad.
I remember a garbage can.
Oh, man. All right. So, well, thank you, Tom. You do the C2E2 read much better than we do. So
I do my best to bring enthusiasm.
It. Yeah. So Amazing Spider-Man number 621. Whenever you get a Spider-Man issue with Black Cat, it's going to be good. Whenever you get a Spider-Man issue drawn by Michael Lark with Black Cat, it's going to be awesome.
So. I really liked it. When I first read that he was drawing it, I kind of went, what?
Yeah.
Just because I don't associate it with Spider-Man kind of action, but
it was great.
He drew Daredevil, so what's the difference?
Yeah,
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
I loved it. I thought the art was really good. I thought the story was great. This whole Mr. Negative thing, what they're building, this bigger arc that they're building with Spider-Man is just been great. It has not ever since I draw a line. I keep going back to it, but ever since that shitty Guggenheim arc back in December, since then it's been gold.
Yeah, it's been a full year. These 2 months worth of gold.
Yeah,
Ron Richards is drawing a line.
Poor Guggenheim. I love angry Aunt May. By the way.
Yeah, but it's uncomfortable.
Oh, it's so uncomfortable.
In the last issue, I felt bad. I like put the issue down. I was like, oh, why would she say that to Peter? You know how many times he's had to like leave dates to help you? You're just gonna turn on him? Ugh.
She just drove Harry to Mary Jane too. That's going to cause problems.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, Harry and Mary Jane. I thought that was the real interesting part of it. I thought that was. I was like, ooh, yeah.
What if this is a real status change quote for Aunt May, and she will just now be a raging bitch?
I like it.
It was really uncomfortable though, but in a good way.
Yeah,
I really liked Incorruptible number 3 as well. Although I think the biggest hamper to this book, I don't even think that's pop. A proper English word, but I'm drinking, is that the art is, I mean, you can tell he's a new artist and he's still feeling his way around drawing a page and things. So that in that sense, it kind of hurts the book, but I thought the story is getting stronger with every issue for Incorruptible.
Yeah, it sort of reminded me a little bit of when I first read Irredeemable, that first issue, I was like, I've kind of seen like bad Superman 1,000 times, but it's gotten better because you can see Mark Waid sort of has a bigger idea of how to make this universe. So now that he's got time to build it, it's sort of gone beyond the normal bad Superman type story where you're seeing kind of how it affects everyone.
Got creepy and sadistic and uncomfortable at times. Yeah.
Yes. Just like life.
Yeah, I love, with the bad Superman thing, but I love the idea of the good villain, like the what he's done with this type of villain, this, you know, invincible, take whatever he wants, and he's like, you know, now I'm gonna protect the city instead of terrorize it. And I think that I've liked it from the get-go, and I thought this issue was the strongest so far. I thought the art really kind of clicked into place for me this time. It had the
best oh my god moment of the week, which was the final scene when we finally get to see some of what drove what's his name,
Max Damage.
Yeah,
be good. Was he's completed a heist and comes outside and just sees Plutonian just wipe out a street full of people with his heat vision.
Yeah,
I was just like, oh fuck, like yeah. That's one of those things you don't see all that often. It was just brutal.
Yeah.
It was really good.
I like it. I feel like this is like not a lot of people are talking about it that much, and they should be paying attention to it, because as Irredeemable has gotten a lot of attention, but Incorruptible right now is like a sleeper. It's a sleeper pick. There you go.
If you like Irredeemable, you'll like Incorruptible. I mean, it's the same tone.
Yeah.
So exactly. Just buy it. Jesus.
You trying to get a pull quote?
Wait, give me a second. No. Get back to me at the end.
My pick of the week was G.I. Joe Cobra 2, number 2. Which was, I think it's only been 2 issues, but so far they've really done a good job of building on the first one and not dropping the ball. You always worry about the unplanned sequel, and so far so good. And this is almost better than the first one because they're going in a new direction. It's not Chuckles undercover right now. Now it's a whole bunch of other things going on and a lot of really good action and brutality in this one. And not that brutality is good, but in a shocking, you're not expecting brutality way. I really like this issue. Antonio Fuso is becoming really, really good. He's even better than the first time you saw him in the last miniseries.
Brutal.
I read it in trade, so I don't know.
You enjoyed the first trade, though, right?
I love the first. I'm gonna get the second trade totally.
I haven't gotten to it yet, but I've got the first trade, but I haven't read it yet. I feel bad.
You've been busy.
I can't lie. I have not been busy.
So he's got a lot of journals.
Those neighbor kids aren't going to yell at themselves.
So Spider-Woman number 6.
Who's going to do all the muttering?
Shaking their fist. Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev on Spider-Woman. And it's been a while since we talked about it. And I was thinking about this on the bus as I was coming home. Here's my thing. This book isn't doing it.
Well, that's why I dropped it 2 issues ago, because I was completely bored by it, which sucks because I love Bendis and I love Maleev.
But here's the thing is that I'm going to criticize the art a little. I love Maleev, and do not get me wrong, the art is beautiful. I love it. Every page I get totally drawn into. But something is different from when he was on Daredevil, that now it just all seems really – and I don't know, maybe it was the motion comic. Maybe he was working on the motion comic at the same time, but it feels very static. Every frame and every page is stiff and still, and there's little to no fluidity. Even when there's action going on, it's almost like snapshots from a fight scene, you know, as opposed to feeling like you're going with the flow of the fight. It feels very stiff and heavy.
My problem is I felt that way kind of about the story.
Yeah,
you know, like I remember we talked about the first issue, and I remember saying that I don't want to go back to the Skrulls, and now we're back with the Skrulls, and that's one.
Well, and now in this story,
just kind of like, I don't really care about what's happening.
Now the Skrulls are gone, and this whole issue was the Thunderbolts trying to capture her to bring her to Osborn, which doesn't fit in with what's going on in Siege and all. Don't get me started, you know. But it's this project didn't work. I'm sorry, it's not working. So I think they should. And there's even on the front page note: this takes place before Thunderbolts 134. It's like, oh.
The question is, are you going to continue to buy it?
Well, yeah. Sure.
Is this an ongoing?
I don't know.
No, it's a mini, I think, right?
Is it a mini? Yeah.
How many issues?
37. No, I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea.
Mini maxi.
Yeah, eight, maybe? I don't know. So, but it's beautiful. Don't get me wrong. There were a lot of two.
Maybe it is an ongoing. I don't think it might be an ongoing.
I don't think it can't be an ongoing, believe, at this pace. I mean, it's like literally 2 months between issues. But listen.
We're all limited. We're all a limited series.
Yeah,
at the end of the day.
That's a good, wow, that's deep.
All right, now I'm depressed.
But there were what was interesting was I was counting the number of like two page spreads and like full page splash pages, and there are a lot. Like there was a lot of them. So that's all.
I've called up Spider-Woman on the iFanboy here, and just by looking at the 6 covers, I can tell you this book is about Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
Sometimes she's kneeling. Sometimes she's jumping. Sometimes she's flying through the air.
Well, on the title page, right, at, you know, in including the note that this takes place before Thunderbolts 134, in addition to the writer, the artist, and letter, the model for Spider-Woman got credited.
She's been credited the whole time.
Jolynn Carpenter. Yeah, I just noticed that for the first time. So,
well, that's unfortunate.
Let's get her on the show.
Did you read Battlefield's Happy Valley number 3?
I did, and I don't know if it was the medication, but I got weepy. Like I always do with this series. It's like Ennis knows exactly how to kick me directly in the balls of my heart to make me like, just when you think, you know, you always know something bad is going to happen,
right?
But you're not quite sure what it is.
And every time you think maybe this time it won't be the one that the bad thing happens.
And then it's like, oh God, that's a real punch in the gut to have it happen. I mean, the one bad thing I could say about this story was it was a little hard at times to tell who was who.
My only problem, which kept it from being a 5-star book, was the final flight. This is about a flight crew in World War II, and there's Australian flight crew, and they have to do one more bombing run, which you know is going to be a problem because that's the Murtaugh rule, where if you're about to retire, you're going to get shot. And when they actually get shot up their plane, it was a little hard to tell who was shot, what was going on. Like, I had a whole big problem figuring out who was actually hurt when they got hit.
On the other hand, though, I think maybe it could have been on purpose almost, because the character himself is talking about, you know, if you die up there, you just die. You're just some, you know, faceless person in a mask who, like, suffocates. But again, that's probably not the best visual sort of storytelling element either. But I got to the end and I was like, God damn it, he did it to me again. And I rolled back over on the bed and I just sort of closed my eyes and
fought back
the tears.
I'm not gonna do it, breathe.
It's just a fictional character, Tom.
I'm not gonna let it get to me.
He does it to me with these war stories.
Ugh. The next one is a return to the Tankies characters, which I don't know how I feel about that.
Oh yeah, going back to the well. Ooh.
He'll still
be good.
Yeah.
So, all right. So those are the books that came out this week that we deemed were interesting enough to talk about. But all of you bought comics and go to ifanboy.com/comics and do your pull list. And there you can rate and review your books. And there are some other books that you enjoyed or didn't enjoy. And our first one, first user review comes from Roy Vampire, who reviewed Dark Avengers number 14, gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. Wow. He really liked it. And at the time of this recording, 0.1% of you made it your pick of the week. And here is Roy Vampire's entire review.
I bet it was Roy.
Yep, he probably was. Brian Michael Bendis can write the hell out of Norman Osborn. It's just that simple. This issue really brought the Sentry story to a head and did so in a great way. It also goes to great lengths to explain why the Sentry in Siege is a lot quieter and a lot more sadistic than he has been in the past. The art is nothing to sneeze at either. The layouts continue to amaze me, and after this run, I'll gladly follow Diodato to any project he moves to. This little plastic castle Norman has built for himself is finally toppling all around him, and it's fucking beautiful.
Ooh.
Yeah, ooh, hey, ooh.
Diodato's doing Secret Avengers, so that's where you're following him to. I felt like this was unnecessary.
Yep.
I felt like we didn't need the further explanation of why the Sentry's now quiet and angry and evil. We got that in the last issue.
He's sick of himself.
Finally.
Oh, I forgot. We've got Tom here. Tom is one of the charter members of the I Hate Sentry fan club.
And the $100 is still out there.
You're one of the original ones. Yeah, totally.
Whoever to get him in your sights and take him down. We're so close now. We're so close to having it happen.
I just I don't know. I lost interest very quickly in this issue. I thought it would be more Sentry focused, which is backwards, but that's what I was expecting.
Shitty thing for me about this is that it's got the Siege cover treatment, and it really has nothing to do with this. Is all prequel to Siege, and so if you're reading Siege, you don't need to be it gives you more information. Like Roy was right, it gives you more information as why the Sentry's being the way he is. But
you didn't need that information.
Yeah, this is 2 month old stories. That's my only, you know.
Yeah, and Siege is half over. It's not even like Siege just started, or it's like one issue, and Siege is half over, which is you know, unfortunate. But
so fuck the Sentry.
Odair 77 reviewed Punisher 14. He gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And at the time of the recording, 0.48% of the iFan base made this a pick of the week. While I was skeptical when Marvel released the teasers for Frankencastle, I have to pronounce that this story is without doubt the absolute bee's knees. If I want Frank the Vigilante, I've got Aaron's Max series, whereas here I can read Frank in the Marvel Universe, just amped to the nth degree. This is Frank Castle striding through the classic 70s monster comics of guys like Gerber and Wolfman. And this is absolutely glorious. It's a story that literally drips with Remender's passion for these characters.
Well, and that's interesting, that part of the review, and I'm sure he wrote more about it, but the real star of this issue was the combination of Tony Moore's art and Dan Brereton's painted pages.
Yeah, that was really awesome.
It was really awesome. And I could see why, like, so basically the story was kind of bookmarked around the Punisher and talking to Henry, his little ward, his little punk hardcore kid ward, who did some research to find out what they're up against. And it basically tells the story of the flashback of this guy, and it's all painted by Dan Brereton. And it's like, Dan Brereton's good. Like, I forgot how good he was. It's been a while since he's
it was
good.
Perfect for the story, too.
It totally was, yeah.
And I would love to see a Marvel digital comic of how long it took Henry to start acting normally when Frankenstein Frank Castle came to get him.
Yes, exactly. We kind of danced between those two panels, didn't we?
Yeah. Oh, you're a Frankenstein now.
Ah, okay, I brought my laptop.
The monsters have excellent Wi-Fi. I will skip that.
That's true.
There might be a few more questions to ask.
And Tony Moore's art, you know, we love Tony Moore, and his art was just great. I thought that the origin of the Japanese guys, finally finding out who these Japanese guys, was really interesting too. I thought that was really good. You know, basically they're, you know, a team of Japanese guys who team up to fight the atomic monsters in Japan, kill them all, and then decide they just need to kill all monsters around the world and kill all the monsters, then start killing Morlocks and start killing mutants, and then now they're after the Marvel
it's
monsters.
It's that slippery slope of hate.
Yeah, it is. It totally is. So
I don't know why I stopped reading this.
You got to go back and pick it all up.
I remember the second issue came out, and I went, why did I not get that?
Yeah.
I enjoyed the first one, so I'm probably going to get the trade, because I kick myself every time the issue comes out. I didn't get it.
You should do it.
I'm stupid. I fail. Fail.
Fail. Fail. You're doing it wrong.
Franken fail.
So go to ifanboy.com/comics, do your pull list and all that fun stuff. And after you've read your comics, you should go to Audible and download an audiobook and listen to it. Because Audible is the place for audiobooks, and we thank them for sponsoring this episode. You can download Audible titles to your iPod or any other device, any other MP3 player type thing, your computer, anything that plays music will play an Audible audiobook. They've got over 60,000 titles across all genres. And if you go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy and you sign up, you get a free audiobook and a 14-day trial. They've got a ton of great stuff. If you name an author, they likely have something by them. Have a pick for you this week, but I'm going to pull something right now. I'm just going to type in comic books and see what comes up in Audible. And here you go.
Comes back with nothing.
And, here you go. Comic books from superheroes to manga. They've got a ton of great stuff. It's all about comic books. The Science of Superheroes is in there. The 10-Cent Plague, the great comic book scare and how it changed America. That's a good book. We've talked about that before. Laugh Factory, Volume 19. That's more about stand-up comedy. But anyway.
a book by Stewart Comic Books.
But they've got great stuff, so go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy and get your free audiobook and the 14-day trial. You don't want to miss out on that.
Email time. Shane from Adelaide, Australia writes in, and he says, I was just holidaying in Bali. Well, good for you.
Isn't that Bali?
Your exciting, exotic life.
Whoa, somebody's drunk and angry.
Let's start over. I was just holidaying. Third time's a charm. I was just holidaying in Bali recently and was sitting in front of the television when I stumbled across an old Justice League of America movie. It was really painful to watch and so poorly made that I was just left wondering if it was really intended to be made this way as a joke, or was a serious movie that just turned out really, really, really bad. A quick look at IMDb uncovered that it was meant to be a pilot for a television show that was never shown in the U.S. Just wondering if any of you have seen it or know anything about it. I know both Ron and I have seen it.
This is the legendary Justice League with David Ogden Stiers as Martian Manhunter, right?
Tom, have you seen this?
Yeah, and the most concerning part to me about this is, why are we sending this stuff to Bali?
Well, I looked this
up. Is there a reason why other countries hate us?
That's a totally good point. Oh, my God.
Well, I looked this up after I got this email, and it first to explain this, in 1997, CBS, the television network, ordered a pilot for Justice League of America. They were going to think about doing a Justice League of America TV show. And they came up with this thing that they made. And it was never shown in the U.S. It was actually shown in Europe and in other places. Like they sold it, they bought it, and they aired it. And
that is why
I remember
they hate us.
In the days, in the pre-YouTube days, you know, I had to buy a VHS bootleg of this at somewhere to see it, and I did. And it's almost beautiful in its awfulness.
It really is. It was
so wrong.
Didn't they merge Hal and Guy Gardner?
Well,
kind
it's the whole concept is of the Giffen DeMatteis Justice League, where the they all live together, and it's a comedy mostly, and the characters are Green Lantern, who is actually he's Guy Gardner, but he looks like Hal Jordan, and he wears part of the Kyle Rayner costume. Ice, the Atom, Fire, Flash, who's a moron, and he's Barry Allen, and Fat John Jones,
David Ogden Steers.
And they're fighting the Weatherman, Dr. Eno.
It's a terrible thing.
Yeah.
It's once it's seen, almost,
cannot be unseen.
Yeah, you cannot unsee it once it has been seen.
I remember buying it, watching it, and immediately going to Ron's house.
Yes, and I remember that. You're like, you got to see this. It was so bad. Oh, man.
Poor Volley. God.
I know. Like, well, seriously, like, it's Thursday night, must see TV on Volley. It's like on Channel 2. Oh, God.
Yeah, it's really bad. Yeah. It's almost laughably bad in terms of production values, everything. It's horrible.
That's awesome.
But that's what that was.
There's that story for you. All right.
I don't know. I have that tape somewhere. I don't know where it is. Of course, I don't know on VCR.
I was just gonna say, you can't do anything. You can look at the tape now. So
I'm gonna watch it on YouTube after this.
All right. Our next email says from Bobby from Seattle, who's got a relationship question for us. Yes. Bobby is I'm currently friends with a girl I've known for about 2 years now, and while I've always found her attractive, she wishes to not date guys in high school, so I've respected her boundaries. please tell me she's older and not younger.
Yeah.
Yeah, or no, or she's in high school and she only dates college guys.
Yeah, maybe. So we've always enjoyed a mild flirtation due to the fact that both of us enjoy video games and obscure science fiction shows like Doctor Who and Firefly. However, recently I've discovered that she has a secret passion for comics that she hasn't let on about. She also has been hinting on furthering our relationship to something else without explicitly saying dating. While it would be nice to start going out with this girl, as it's near impossible to find an attractive girl who likes sci-fi video games and comics, I also don't want to ruin our relationship as it is right now by asking her out and things going wrong. What should I do? Thanks, guys. Love the show. Keep up the good work.
This is a minefield.
Yeah, there are so many places he can fall. So many areas where it could all go wrong.
Oh, God.
Well, I would say, first of all, that obviously Bobby's in high school.
Yes, yes.
Once you get out of high school, you'll find that it's not so unusual to find an attractive girl who likes sci-fi video games and comics.
Yes, that's for sure. Yeah.
Find out what comics she likes.
Yeah, I mean, if she likes
it's like Sandman,
run
the opposite way as fast as you can. And like, if you find out that she's, the only thing she likes is like Gold Key comics from the 60s, you know, then you could probably be all right. But
there's
if she's like,
there's a future there. She's
a future with that. Yeah. And I would like to urge you, young man. Bobby from Seattle, don't limit yourself to only girls who like sci-fi video games or comics.
Yep.
Because it's actually nice to be in a relationship where you have your own things. And sometimes when people like the same stuff too much,
yep,
it's weird.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily work out.
I testify. I can agree to that. It brings a whole new set of challenges that you don't imagine would occur. I think it's a good way of putting it.
Whose Firefly box set is this?
When you break up, or it's a big disaster.
But aside from the likes or the dislikes, he's in the classic high school situation, which is the I'm friends with a girl, I want to get in her pants, but I don't want to screw up the relationship. And here's the thing. In order to, like, what is the phrase? In order to bake a cake, you got to break a couple eggs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know.
Omelet, but yes. Yeah, it still works.
Okay.
The metaphor still is valid.
Okay. Yeah, I was there. Seriously, man, I mean, I'm in my 30s, and I didn't figure this out until my late 20s. But it was just like, you know, if you want something, you know, like, you'll never know or you'll never get it unless you try. And could you fuck up the relationship? Could you end your friendship? You might, but that's the risk. And you don't get anything by not taking a risk.
But then the decision is, how much do you like her?
Right.
And how much do you value her as a friend? If it's if you like her only a little, but you're really valuable as a friend, maybe you don't want to ruin that.
Right.
But if you, you really do have strong feelings for her, then obviously.
Because the thing is that whoever you're going to date, you want. I mean, I enjoy my best friend being the person I'm dating, one of my best friends. You know, like, so you want to have a great friendship and a good relationship. Just take it to the next level. Don't be afraid. I say go for it.
Rent a movie called Say Anything.
Watch it together.
Watch it together. Yeah. Then it'll all become clear to you.
All right. Thank you, Bobby, for sending in a relationship question. If you have a comics-themed relationship question, email us at contact@ifanboy or any other questions. We will answer anything. So,
I like to look for girls who like booze, risky sex. And...
risky sex.
Dangerous stuff.
And baseball.
I like someone who respects secrets and keeps secrets.
Someone knows how to keep their mouth shut. All right.
I like a girl who can change her own oil.
You can give them 37% off on trade paperbacks at In-Stock Trades. They got free shipping on orders over $50. And they've got over 9,000 trade paperbacks in stock and available for order right now. They got new releases every Wednesday, and orders should ship within 48 hours from www.instocktrades.com. And this May 22nd in Fort Wayne, Indiana, is going to be the Summit City Comic Con. That's in conjunction with In-Stock Trades. And you can find information on that at www.summitcitycomiccon.com.
You're going to that one, Tom, right?
Spiritually, I'll be connected via satellite.
Just the whole time, you're in the background on a big TV.
Norton bring his laptop and just Skype you in. Like,
there's like some sort of shadowy bearded man in that dark monitor. Turn it away.
Look away.
He's hunched over.
Look away.
All right. On to the voicemail. Our first voicemail's got a question about Marvel and all these pesky events.
Hey, this is Mike from Phoenix, Arizona, and I wanted to ask the fanboys, what do you guys think of the, what's the word for it, oversaturation of events that Marvel's been putting out? I feel like it's just been one after the other after the other. So I just wanted to hear what you have to say about that. Bye.
Wow, what coincidental timing, Mike from Phoenix, Arizona. I wrote an article this week on iFanboy about event comics and the whole idea of, is there fatigue out there? Because a lot of talk on the web this week was over the sales and how far down they are. Yep. So I looked at the numbers and crunched the numbers, and you know, the numbers are down, but there's lots of factors and reasons why. But I think event fatigue is probably one of them. Marvel seems to acknowledge it by saying that after Siege, they're going to be taking a break from events. How long that lasts, who knows, because of events, no matter how you hate them, sell a lot.
They're still going to have events, but they'll be contained within a line of books. So it'll be like an Avengers event, an X-Men event.
Right. There won't be a company-wide event. That's what they're saying. There won't be any more Dark Reigns, which is not an event, but there won't be any more company-wide. Every book is influenced somehow, or every family is influenced somehow. They're going to take a break and just focus on small events.
Which is funny, because last week we posted the art for the Heroic Age, which launches in May at Marvel Comics. So,
well, that's not an event. That's just
a status quo.
The goal should be to make every issue an event.
Which the irony is that Siege is really good and Blackest Night's really good.
Yep.
You know, so the event, I think an event fatigue is only comparable to how bad your event is.
Right.
Yeah, I think sometimes comic book fans get a little, like, they develop like this weird victim syndrome, like they're being victimized by events. You can just not buy them.
Yep.
I don't buy some of them. It's fine.
Yeah, you don't have to buy.
But the numbers are down. But that's I think especially at Marvel with Dark Reign. I think Dark Reign went too long. I think it affected the momentum of the big books at Marvel, and that's showing in the fact that Siege sold less than half what Secret Invasion did, and less than half what Civil War did, and the numbers are down on Blackest Night, although not as much, but they are down. So I think it's just as I said in the article, there's a cycle. You know, we ramp up on events. We get a lot of events, and then they get people get sick of them. There's less events, and then after a while, we go back up again.
I do think the real only black mark to Blackest Night was December and January with that deluge of books.
Yeah,
it was a deluge. You know, and
it was a bit much.
Yeah. So, but anyway, all right. On our next voicemail, it's got a question about Golden Age. That wasn't a sentence.
Hey guys, this is Jeff R. from Dayton, Ohio. Had a quick question for you. I know that you all love modern comics, obviously, and you all have your favorites from the past, too. Like, you know, Ron loves the Chris Claremont X-Men. years. But I was curious if you guys had a fondness for any Golden Age stories. I know that I personally like the Detective Comics run from the 30s and 40s and all the Jack Cole Plastic Man stuff. But is there anything that you guys have a fondness for that's really, really old, like from the beginning? Or is it mostly just from the Silver Age on that some of you guys like more than others? Thanks for the podcast. Thanks for the site. Look forward to hearing your answer. Bye.
I love the Golden Age. I love reading those old books. I don't have many to read them, though. I haven't read, like, I don't know, like an arc that is my favorite, though.
I love old Golden Age comics as well. And the DC Chronicles, you know, with the Superman and the Batman is really good.
I've got the first seven or eight of those Chronicles.
Yeah. Those are a really good place to look for them. And it's I always love about the Golden Age stuff is sometimes I think people think that, like, comics today are sort of like the predestined way comics were supposed to be, and that everyone was trying to make comics like this previously but failed. When really those guys writing and doing that stuff back then were science fiction writers. They were just as smart as writers today. They're just writing in a different audience, in a different atmosphere. Right. When you look at it that way, it's really interesting to appreciate them completely differently. There's so, you know, like old Flash comics, it's like the Flash hitting guys in the face with pies. You know, people weren't like, oh, these villains are not dark enough,
right,
you know, for me. It's just a totally different atmosphere.
And there was a level of, like with the pies, a level of wackiness. I know, like, when I talked to Eric Larson a couple months ago about the next issue project that he's been doing, that, you know, he was saying how the Golden Age was just hysterical, how, like, the stuff that was in there was just, like, not compared to how it is now. It was just like this crazy madcap kind of stuff that happened.
But also very dark in times. Yeah, I mean, I have the Silver Age. I think you can love every age differently. I like the Silver Age is over the top, wacky, science fiction-y, goofy, fun.
Yeah.
The Golden Age could be really dark. I mean, you had a Batman that
carried a gun,
regularly mowed people down with bullets.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a killer. You had a Superman who was almost a socialist. I mean, it was a different era. The comics are completely different. The characters are completely different. And I love each era differently.
Yeah.
I think each era brings something different to the table that I love for different reasons.
There was almost a wider variance of, like, what was around at the time. When you think about crime comics and the EC comics and all that stuff that's going on, in a lot of ways, because they sold so much bigger, there's just a huge amount of stuff to choose from. So it's a real, if you go back and look for that stuff and find reprints, you can find very sophisticated modern things.
My favorite portion of the Batman Golden Age books is when he would turn to the camera and lecture us about crime not paying, which he would do with quite a bit of regularity. See, kids.
It's better than in the Silver and the Bronze Age where he lectures about the rules of the Justice League, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Always with a lecture.
Wait for the Tom versus the Flash when Iris dies and Batman's like, let's kick Flash out of the league.
Really?
Yeah. He's kind of a dick about it.
Awesome. All right, our last voicemail has got a question about back issues.
Hi, fanboys. This is P.S. Earl, also known as Poser Do. I had a question for you. I know you guys tend to get some stuff in trades, and Connor has a whole bunch of omnibuses and whatnot, which I imagine you guys get at instocktrades.com, where waiting for the trade has never been easier. But my question has to deal with back issues. Is there anything that actually sends you guys to the bin for back issues, like a specific writer, artist, or title? Or is it something that might not be available in a sort of reprinted format? So just let me know. What do you guys buy in back issues, if you buy back issues at all, and why?
Well, I obviously buy a lot of trades. People know that. I listen to the show and know I read a lot of trades. I like to read in trades. But I will occasionally stumble backwards into back issues. But I know that Tom and Ron proactively look for back issues.
Yes. I'm a back issue diver.
I'll just flip through it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not even looking for anything. Because you'll just find weird stuff that you want to get. You know, you'll find a cover of a comic book where there's, like, dinosaurs with guns shooting the Challengers of the Unknown. I don't know who drew it. I don't know who wrote it. Doesn't matter. It's a dollar. I'm going to buy it.
Exactly. Well, there's a difference in the back issues. I mean, like, there's like, I rarely go through like the organized back issues, you know, although I am working on runs. Like, I'm working on a New Mutants run. I'm working on a Uncanny X-Men run. I'm working on a Defenders run. As the collector part of me, I want to collect titles that I really liked, but I'll go through the quarter or the 50 cent or the dollar bin. That's where I found like the only Brian Michael Bendis Batman story ever written and published. That Batman anthology that came out in like 99 or something like that. Remember I found that? I found the comic series that Marvel put out in the 80s. Right. It was awesome. Like, then you find weird shit, you know, like that you just like it's like the kind of comics that you heard about that haven't been collected in trade or haven't been collected in collected editions that you just want to like, oh, I want to check that out. I've heard good things about it. Things that have been lost to the ages almost, you know.
So. Are you still trying to get your All-Star Squadron run?
I started doing that right when I moved and things have been weird. Yeah. My back issues, I need to do a major, I need to reorganize. And so
San Francisco's not an All-Star Squadron town.
No, it's not. It's really not.
Is it a JSA town? You go All-Star Squadron, you get that crap out of here.
More of a JSA town, yeah. So
I will find stuff, and I'm all for back issues that are actually interesting and rare.
Yeah,
you know, like stuff that you can find very easily in trade. I'm not interested, but stuff from you know the, I did that mini 2 years ago about the Captain America issues that I got at auction, and yep. I got some old Justice League issues and old Invaders, Roy Thomas Invader stuff that's not going to be collected in trade for anytime soon. That. Yeah. If there's suddenly a Roy Thomas Invaders omnibus, then I'll get that and don't worry about the back issues. But until then,
keep waiting for that one.
Right. Until that happens, I'll have the old issues. And so that's something I like, the stuff that's actually interesting and not, you know, I don't need to fill out a run, but I do like to stumble upon things I wasn't.
Would you not want like a detective run or like a Justice League run or any, like you don't want to collect a run of comics like I'm doing or?
No. I mean, if I was super rich and had nothing to do.
Why aren't you like me?
Be exactly like me. I'm not really like that either. I mean, there's if I see something, like I'll pick up a Legion book if it's like a dollar or something, but I don't hunt down expensive stuff. Like, I'd set my own limit for what I'd pay for something.
Yep.
Because I like
to, did you set or your wife set it?
I said, don't tell her I'm looking for stuff.
do you have to set up a separate PayPal account that she doesn't know about so you can route to your eBay buying?
Mr. Hercules Q Platinum buys a lot of books, let's just say. It's not coming from Tom Kidder's bank account. I like the idea that I could just leave everything though. Like, if I needed to pare down my stuff, like every couple of years, I just get rid of a bunch of stuff that I probably bought for like 50 cents, but I've read it and I can't say that, you know, I'm going to ever read it again. And I'm like, oh, it was nice to have that for a while. I'll donate it to someplace.
Yeah. You dumped a bunch of books on Chris before you moved, right?
Oh, yeah. I gave it to him. I'm sure his wife loved it. He came home with a plastic bag filled with water, like water distorted Justice, Legion of Superhero issues.
Oh, God.
70s. The way they were meant to be read.
Exactly. Were the Levitz books or?
Levitz, Conway, everything.
Yeah, nice. Well,
yeah, it was good.
You're good. Good man. All right. Well, if you have a question, you can call us on the voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. And whoa, this one's running long, but that's cool because Tom is fun to talk to.
Plus, we had lots of stuff to talk about.
We did.
Let's talk about Josh's baby some more.
Yay.
Little graphically.
Still not born.
Graphically, L. Flanagan. There are a few Battle Pug shirts left. We only have a handful. Yeah. I don't know exactly how many, but there's only a handful left. So if you're looking to get a Battle Pug shirt, you might want to get that soon. Check the sizes on the website before you order, because a lot of them are sold out.
Yes. While you're at the store at ifanboy.com/store, you can, if you haven't gotten the new Fear Agent shirt yet, you got to pre-order it now. It's the only Fear Agent shirt that has ever existed. So if you love Fear Agent as much as we do, wear your t-shirt with pride. Order it now. We're going to be going to print on it very soon, and orders will be shipping soon. So get your pre-order in. Make sure you don't miss out.
Bobby from Seattle, Fear Agent shirt. For the girl?
Yeah, girl size, cut, girl cut size. Yeah, or Battle Pug. The Battle Pug shirts on girls look, it's a ringer t-shirt, looks good.
Put a little note on it that says, I want to battle your pug. Wink. Wink Bobby.
So we also, in addition to this podcast, we do some other wonderful podcasts, including the iFanboy Don't Miss. This past week, what the fuck came out? Was it Chris? Chris talked to Phil Hester. That's what it was,
yeah,
right?
Was it?
I don't know.
Wow, this one just went off the rails. Well,
Tom's old friend Chris Niesman talked to somebody.
Yes, and then this coming Monday, I'm talking to the writers of Broken Trinity, Pandora's Box number 1 from Top Cow, a pretty cool action book that you might want to check out when you head to the store. So go to iTunes, search for iFanboy Don't Miss, and subscribe to that show.
No, he talked to Sterling Gates and Jamal Igel.
That's what it was. It was Supergirl 50 because I was traveling and I didn't listen to it yet. That's why. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Supergirl 50, yes. Which had art by Cliff Chang in it.
Yes, I know, which I almost picked up because of the Cliff Chang art, but I didn't buy it. But
and Helen Slater wrote that story.
I know.
The real
story. but Jamal Igel and Sterling Gates are awesome, so you should
that. Chris Niesman, your old pal.
Yeah, exactly.
He's still my friend.
I heard you guys weren't talking anymore.
There's some legal matters about exactly who owns the Around and Around comics, but we are working through that.
It's business, not personal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a business thing. It's fine.
As we said, you can get the t-shirts at ifanboy.com/store. There you can also find information about our memberships, and we have a lot of giveaways. This month we've got another giveaway happening now, and if you want to be eligible for the giveaway, you have to be an iFanboy member, and you do that by joining up and paying $4 a month or $42 a year, and that gets you a prize pack of a comic, a sticker, some buttons, and our internal love. And if you join up for the higher price of $10 a year or $100 a month, oh, that's backwards. $10 a month or $100 a year, you get all the prize pack plus a t-shirt that I pre-wear just for you.
You keep saying it. People are going to start believing it.
They should believe it.
Do you run around in it? Like, do you get a full day?
I do exercise. I do squats. all kinds of things.
Anyway.
So you can become a member and you can be eligible for a giveaway prize. We've given away lots of books. Last week we gave away a bunch of Top Cow books. This week we have a Vertigo prize pack that includes many Vertigo books that I am now clicking
hard
on the
covers.
Link to
so
see.
We've got the Swamp Thing is in there.
Swamp Thing. Saga of the Swamp Thing Volume 2 from Alan Moore. Shade the Changing Man's Volume 1 and 2. Air Volume 2. And a Sandman original graphic novel from Neil Gaiman. And the winner of that giveaway is William Pillsbury.
Congratulations, Billy. William. Yes.
William Pillsbury out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
And February is not over. We've got one last giveaway. So if you're not a member yet, sign up by this Thursday to become a member. And we're giving away – this is the one that we've been fighting over. We're going to be giving away a signed copy of Choker Number 1 from Ben Templesmith and Ben McCool, as well as a – page of original art from Ben Templesmith from the Choker preview that appeared in Liberty Comics number 2 from Image Comics this past summer. It's the second page of Choker that Ben ever worked on, but Ben Templesmith ever worked on.
It's pretty cool.
It's really effing cool. And don't forget to pick up Choker number 1. There were some shipping mishaps this month, but it does come out in stores this Wednesday. So check it out. If you like the book, you could own a piece of art from it.
And also, if you're going to be in New York City this week at Bergen Street Comics on Friday, there's going to be a Choker release party with Ben Templesmith and Ben McCool. They'll both be there. It's Bergen Street Comics in Brooklyn. You can look it up on the internet. They've got a website. I think it's bergenstreetcomics.com.
We'll link to it from the show notes. Yeah.
I'll be there at the party Friday. You can come hang out with me. We usually get really drunk. Yeah. And Ben Tempest will be there, and he'll be signing books. And so will Ben McCool, the writer of Choker. So go check that out. And I'd like to actually, Ron, you don't know about this, but I'd like to congratulate the winner of the Choker giveaway.
Who's
picked him already? It's Sean Fitzpatrick.
Oh, Fitzy.
He's the winner of the Choker page.
Of Brooklyn, New York?
Yeah, Sean Fitzpatrick of Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, how about that? Yeah.
A little preemptive strike there.
Yeah, we're going to save on shipping costs that one, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, I'll just walk it over to where he lives. It's no big deal. So congratulations, Sean.
Now,
see Sean Fitzpatrick.
In all seriousness, it's going to be we're going to announce the winner on next week's show,
yes.
As well as talk about Choker number 1, the book that will save the comic industry, as Josh calls it.
Did he really say that?
Well, because it's gotten a lot of press.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah, that's why. So.
So, yeah, come to the party. If you're around Brooklyn, I'll be there.
Yeah, cool.
Don't talk to me.
All right. So make sure you head over to ifanboy.com, check out Josh's complete pick of the week review. It may be the last thing he does for iFanboy for a while. check out all the great writing. It was a great week in comics with all the DC Entertainment announcements with Jeff Johns and Jim Lee and Dan DiDio getting new jobs and things like that. It was a lot of great discussion over there. And if you like us, go to ifanboy.com/about, and you can find out more about us as well as all our social network links. Be our friend. We'd like to be friends with you. And if you're on Twitter, go to twitter.com/ifanboy. Make sure you follow us for all the news, links, and random stuff that we put up on there. So we also do a video show that comes out every Wednesday. This past week, we did a little spotlight on Terry Moore, which actually he just tweeted about, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Which, not to be confused with the other 15 times Terry Moore has been on the show.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Well, the other time we did a spotlight on him when the book ended.
Ixnay. But we talked about Echo for the first time for an extended period of time.
Yes.
So,
well, also Strangers in Paradise.
Yeah, exactly. So so check out that Terry Moore episode last week. And this coming week, we got another anthology episode with some cool stuff for me, Josh, and Connor, possibly Josh's last video thing he does for a while. No, that's a lie. We'll still be doing the video all through the child stuff, so don't worry about that. The video's not going anywhere. So
the baby will just be there.
Yeah, exactly. We're actually adding the baby to the video show now, so Josh is going to have one of those segment.
Just 5 minutes of the baby laying there.
Yeah, exactly. We're gonna put little comic character stuffed animals around it.
What's the baby Einstein equivalent for comic books? You guys should start that.
That's a good point, yeah.
Shit.
That's a good idea. Shit, write that one down.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. With any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics. I liked the romance questions.
Yes.
Bring them on.
Yes.
They're fun.
Absolutely. And if you like...
And also follow up. Tell us after... If we answer your romance question, please tell us what happened.
Oh, absolutely. Like, what's his name from Seattle? If you go after her, if you do watch Say Anything with her and you get the message and you know what you know and you make the move, let us know how it goes. Send a picture.
Oh, I got to really think about what happens in Say Anything. I got to feel... And now I'm going to look back and be like, oh, no, that wasn't the right advice.
No, that's the right...
That's the boombox over the head, yeah.
Okay, yeah, totally. That's what you need
No, seriously,
do.
And Say Anything is good, but in all seriousness, if when you're in high school and if you're doing the rent a movie date, anything by John Cusack, like Better Off Dead, One Crazy Summer, Gross Point Blank, Say Anything, you cannot go wrong with those movies. Trust
Con Air,
even Con Air, because you can laugh at it. Con Air is a great movie, but
I think you should rent Comic Book Villains.
Yeah, don't.
And if you feel the same level of self-loathing as she does, then you know you're on the same wavelength.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, mutual self-loathing is a good, solid base.
It's what you build a relationship on, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So if you like what we're doing and you like our podcast and our website, stuff like that, go to iTunes, write a review, let people know about it, or tell your friends about it, tell your comic book store, tell people, help spread the word. When you're in iTunes writing reviews, maybe you should write a review for Tom vs. the Flash.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? Tom, why don't you tell us about that?
I read old Flash issues, and then I talk about them, and then you listen to it. And it works because these issues aren't reprinted. That's the beauty of it. I've made up the last 20.
We have no idea, right?
Yeah, nobody knows. Some people be like, I don't quite remember that.
Carrie Bates remembers.
He does. He knows. I hope somewhere Carrie Bates knows that I've been talking about all this.
I know. We should track him down. We really should do that.
Be like, why are you
Tom Cater's interviews Carrie Bates?
That would be awesome. That would be awkward. That's what it would be.
So, anyway, Killing Iris.
What happened? What's the girl's name?
Golden Glider.
No, Stacy.
Stacy Conwell.
Stacy Conwell. Where is she?
She just left. She went on vacation. Came back once.
She went upstairs and never came back down.
She's with Richie's brother.
Is no one curious about this co-ed that lived with the Allens and disappeared?
I feel like there's more story that could have been mined out of a co-ed living with Barry Allen. And
somehow we need to talk to Jeff Johns and get him to work Stacy Conwell back into the story. Like, that would be the best.
Oh, at the first convention we see him at, we're going to bring this up.
Oh, that's a good
point. She's
just going
to wander through. She's going to get a job at the Flash Museum.
So you can find Tom vs. the Flash on iTunes, right?
Yep, you can find it everywhere.
Yes, and if people want to follow you on Twitter, what was your Twitter name?
Tom Caters.
Okay.
Tomkaters.
Easy enough.
German for cat.
Is it really German for cat?
Caters is. So if you Google Caters, if you don't filter for English, a lot of German cat websites. Like
a lot of LOL Caters?
yes.
So, excellent.
Oh boy.
All right. Well, we hope you enjoy the new iFanboy era without Josh. First show in the can. Good job.
Like, it was a smooth transition.
It was
out
a smooth
Josh
transition.
Era.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. It was as if Josh was never here. No. In all seriousness, we congratulate Josh and his wife Lindsay on their new arrival. And if you want to tweet out to him at J.A. Flanagan, congratulate him. We strongly encourage you to do so on Monday. So, or Sunday,
yes.
Or whenever you hear this.
Whenever you listen to this.
Yeah.
Congrats,
2015,
Josh.
If you found these shows somewhere.
Yeah.
If you're digging through the rubble of America and you find this lonely iPod only loaded with iFanboy episodes.
Sticker wrapped around it. All right.
No wonder the world ended. This is all they had to listen to.
What is this inane chatter? What are they talking about? All right. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Tom.